My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. Tonight, it was my turn to pick. Also, we're down a man. Rahul is dealing with some personal issues. But anyways, it was actually his turn to pick, and he selected a movie called 2025, The World Held Hostage by a Virus. But then he had to bow out for personal reasons. So now only Ronald has seen 2025, The World Held Hostage by the Virus, and has vowed that no matter what personal issues Rahul is going through, he is going to force him to watch 2025.
He picked it! Yeah. He's not getting out of it that easy. I don't care how dire the personal issues are.
Yeah. So anyways, so I had a night free and we wanted to do a movie episode. So I just grabbed one off my list of like Hulu. And I, to my shame or whatever, picked Disturbing the Peace, which is, I think, a 2022 movie starring Guy Pearce and directed by an retired snowboarder.
It shows.
Yeah. It also stars Devon Sawa. I picked this. I have a kind of fascination with sort of low budget or to mid budget direct to DVD or direct to streaming now action movies. You often can find very good stuff in there. But what this movie kind of showed me is that there is like strata to that, you know. And this is a $5 million movie, and it feels a lot different from those like $20 million, you know, Scott Adkins direct to streaming action movies that are out there. Yeah.
Those are made with passion, clearly. You know, and honestly, we can get into it.
Yeah.
Maybe I should wait.
Well, I don't know. Let's go around and would you recommend this? I'll start. No, not really. Ronald claims that it's better than 2025, The World Held Hostage by the Virus. But as for me, I think this might be like the second or third worst thing we've seen for the pod, or I've seen for the pod at least. The action sucks, and it's mostly kind of just Guy Pearce like sneaking around a town looking at things while other people sneak around the town trying to look for him. And most of the acting would not be out of place in a porno. Just bad work. Ronald?
Yeah, this feels like a Hallmark movie does an action movie, or Hallmark Channel does an action movie, but probably the acting is a cut below that. It's really, really bad, and I honestly don't know what the hell they were thinking when they made this. It's kind of baffling. Guy Pearce somewhat gives a performance. I will give him that, but for the most part, it's like, it was kind of a waste of money. They should have spent it on other stuff.
What they needed to do was just cast a stuntman as the main guy and then pour all that money into the action set pieces. Because right now it's an action movie that doesn't actually have action, really, which is a problem.
Yeah, well, to be honest, though, the action sequences in this are so bad, not because they don't have a stuntman. It's because they don't have a fight choreographer. Like, I think... what's her name? Something, I want to say Grayson, Kelly Grayson, is a stunt woman.
And Barbara Blank is a performer in the WWE, I think. Barbie, which also, I mean, wrestling isn't quite stunts, but it is like, you know, doing daring things with your body.
Yeah, I would say it's kind of stunts. I mean, it's like a different kind of stunts, but generally those guys like know what they're doing.
Yeah.
This movie didn't really get to showcase that because they don't know how to shoot it. They didn't know how to choreograph it. They needed to hire some other people outside behind the camera, and they didn't do that. So anyways, this was a total waste of time. One of the worst movies I've ever seen. But somehow, you know, not even the worst movie that I saw this week, because I watched one of the most horrible pieces of garbage I've ever seen this week. No, probably literally the most horrible piece of garbage I've ever seen this week. So
yeah,
I'll put terrible movies in one week.
I'll put this in perspective a little bit. So this movie, I said the budget was $5 million. It turns out that's the box office, which sounds insanely high to me. But I bet the budget was like $2 to $3 million. I bet most of that went to Guy Pearce to just sort of amble around a small Texas town for 2 weeks, which is, you know, by all accounts, a very easy job, right?
Yep.
And it was probably just a pretty pleasant vacation for him, eating craft services, hanging out.
And, oh, I don't blame him for taking this job.
No. But what I'm getting at is he has, I mean, leaving the film quality aside, he has every reason to think to view this experience positively, because he got paid a very large amount of money comparatively to do basically nothing, right?
Yeah.
So, but he's still on the Wikipedia page quoting, Guy Pearce named Disturbing the Peace one of his worst films, calling it abysmal.
Well, I'm sure he watched it and was like, Jesus Christ. I mean, there's some stuff where it's like, I'm sure there's some movies where you're doing it and you're like, okay, this isn't that bad. Maybe, you know, with editing, it's going to be okay. And then you see the finished product and you're like, well, the editing made it worse. You know?
Yeah, it definitely didn't help. But it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the time the director of this said, we'll fix it in post. And then they just kind of didn't, because they didn't know how. Among other things, the gunfights are terrible. And then the sound effects they dub in for the gunshots somehow make them even worse.
Yeah, no, it's truly, truly horrible. Well, let's get into the recap.
Yeah, okay. Let me set up a dice roller. Do you want even or odds?
I'll take odds. I'm an odd guy.
Oh, shit, it's me. Okay. Right.
How about you just do it in 1 minute?
Yeah.
And then we'll just talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna buzz you out this time. I'm not going to let you go over.
That's fair. And also just everyone, I really tried watching this movie, but it's just very hard to grasp it in your mind.
There's not much to watch here, honestly. You don't realize how boring it is until you watch it. It starts off okay, but then
it starts off very funny, albeit, and you're like, this is going to be a good time, but then it kind of isn't.
Yeah, it just isn't. Like, okay. Anyways, I'll get into it. All right. 1 minute on the clock. 3, 2, 1, go.
So we open on Guy Pearce, and he's a Texas Ranger, and his partner has been taken hostage. And Guy Pearce is like walking up to him with a gun, and the guy says Guy Pearce's name or his name. And Guy Pearce knows that that's the signal to shoot the hostage taker in the head because his partner's going to duck. But then his partner doesn't duck, so he shoots his partner. And then the hostage taker just kind of looks at him and doesn't try to shoot him. So he takes another shot and kills him. Cut to 10 years later, he's the sheriff of a small town. He's fucking the preacher / cafe waitress, and a bunch of bad guys, outlaw motorcycle gang led by Devin Sawa, rolls into town. It turns out they've got a mole in the bank, and they're robbing the bank because an armored car is coming. A bunch of stuff that's sort of nominally thrilling happens, and Guy Pearce manages to defeat all of the bad guys. It also looks like the bad guys are at one point planning to kill everyone in town. And then there's a subplot where the mayor of the town, who has a Hitler mustache, which is weird, keeps trying to get Guy Pearce fired. So Guy Pearce then runs against him for mayor and becomes the new mayor.
Was a weird subplot.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of like, you know, if you just shut up, you would have been mayor.
Yeah.
Like, he never would have done this except that you antagonized him into doing it.
And I mean, the guy, once he saved everyone in the town from getting burned alive at a church, probably could have become mayor, but I don't know. Also, I'm going to just throw, I don't think that the mayor and the like sole or one of the two law enforcement people in the town should be the same person.
That's probably a good point, but it seems like there's only like 10 people in this town. So
yeah,
I don't know.
So anyways, I guess let's go to high points such as there are.
Yeah, not a lot of high points.
The opening sequence is pretty funny.
The opening sequence is really funny because the fucking way that they shoot guns is like when you're a 5-year-old and you have the toy gun and you shoot it with a huge bang and it goes way back and forth. And it's like, I remember watching this and being like, wow, that was Guy Pearce doing that. Like, he has absolutely shot a gun on camera before. I don't know what the hell he was thinking in this scene, but it looks horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because I don't think that I legit don't think that they had the money for blanks. I think they were using like smoke caps or something, which, you know, probably safer on a low budget thing. We were talking last night and you pointed out that, I mean, certainly this is the kind of movie where they wouldn't have the money for a proper armor. So something could have gone really wrong if they tried to use blanks and stuff, but still.
Yeah.
So they must have been doing some digital work with the gunshots or whatever.
But like you brought up, bafflingly, they have real explosions in this movie.
Yeah, there are two actual really good explosions in this, which might mean that this movie has more good real explosions than the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's kind of wild. They do look pretty good, and it's kind of, but it kind of made me wonder, like, what the hell? They had the budget for this, but not for guns.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I don't care if they use real blanks or whatever. there's plenty of movies out there that look good without blinks. It's that they didn't do any work to try and make it look good. Like, they didn't... Like, honestly, if Guy Pearce had just taken another crack at that scene and not swung his gun wildly while he's firing, I probably wouldn't have really cared. But, like, it's so obvious, and it's, like, such an easy fix to just reshoot that, and they just chose not to for whatever reason. I don't know.
And then the other thing I enjoy about that, which I mentioned a bit, is he accidentally shoots the hostage, and the hostage taker points his gun at him and just kind of looks at him bewildered for a sec, like, hey, man, that was my job or something.
Yeah.
So Guy Pearce can kill him.
Yeah.
Pearce will later claim that he and his partner had a signal where when the partner said Guy Pearce's name, that he knew that the partner was going to duck so Guy Pearce could take the shot, which one implies that they spent a lot of time talking about what they were going to do if the other one got taken hostage, which is strange unless they know their characters in an action movie. And or two, and this is my theory, Guy Pearce just fucked up the shot because he doesn't appear to be that good of a shot in this movie. And then he concocted an elaborate backstory for why it was fine and not his fault.
Yeah. Weirdly, he says that, but then he also doesn't ever carry a gun around until later in the movie. Like, he goes and grabs a gun when he realizes how much the situation has escalated, which we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's
also
crazy.
There's this whole situation. The whole point of him is that he's, you know, the reformed lawman or the reformed outlaw. He's renounced all violence, whatever. But then there's like three different scenes where he like looks odd with heavy heart and knowing that he might be damning himself and goes in and grabs a gun and like loads it up. He does it first with this weird antique pistol that he has that appears to be made out of plastic. And then again with the shotguns. And I think it might happen a third time with the sniper rifle.
Yeah, you might be right. It's very stupid. Yeah. But by the time he's loaded the shotguns, he's already killed like five people.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to give a shit when he does that. It's just like when he's loading the gun. Yeah.
Sorry, hit me.
No, okay, let's do another high point. Yeah.
Okay, so I will, or well, do you want to take one?
Yeah, you do one.
Okay, so one thing that I do admire about this movie is that it has a lot of body positivity messages in it. Like, normally you see an outlaw biker gang and you're like, okay, these guys are all going to be like heavily muscled, you know, dudes and chicks with like killer gleams in their eyes, you know, just walking and incredibly intimidating. But a lot of these guys are like very overweight and kind of seem to struggle like walking long distances. And they also have the craziest facial combination of facial hair you will see in a movie that isn't set in 1860.
Probably literally the only funny joke in this movie is when the armor cop guy runs into one of the biker gangs and he's dressed as a state trooper. And then after they drive by, he's like, wow, that guy's parents were probably brother and sister and cousins or something like that.
Although even then that part is ruined because he goes, I guess they're accepting inbreds, which odd phrase. Yeah. And then his partner, who is the worst actor in the movie, says, well, if they're accepting inbreds, why don't you sign up, with the worst delivery you can imagine.
And like, when we say the worst actor in the movie, it's a high bar. It is like everyone is terrible in this except for Guy Pearce, who bafflingly is barely on screen with anyone else, so he doesn't even have that many lines. It's like, you should have put him and the partner in more scenes together, because I mean, the partner was terrible, but you need some more Guy Pearce, like, you know, playing off somebody else.
Yeah, I think he only gets like two scenes with Devon Sawa, and in one of them, Devon Sawa is like bleeding out or something.
Yeah, and it's like, these are the only two good actors in the movie. And Devon Sawa isn't that great.
Yeah, I mean, he's better than everyone else, but he's still got this weird thing where they keep giving him like high energy, like almost coked out monologues where he's, you know, supposed to be hyper-focusing on words and like giving weird little Tarantino-esque disquisitions on their meaning, but he doesn't have enough energy. He's not putting in enough energy to pull them off, which might just mean that he knew that this movie was a piece of shit and didn't see the point in trying, but still.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, honestly, it wouldn't have really changed anything because everything else in it was so terrible.
Yeah.
So, okay, another high point though. Mm-hmm. Since we're still in the high points, because we'll get into the low points, so we'll get into those. Another high point. Okay. The terrible fight choreography, at least in one of the fights, was kind of a high point for me, because it was so stupid looking, it was really funny. So basically, at the start of the movie, one of the bikers out of the gang goes into a cafe and is like, get me a beer. And the woman running to the bar says, we're not serving beers till 5. And he's like, I didn't ask what you're serving. Give me a beer. And then for whatever, I don't remember exactly what the dialogue was after that. But then they start to fight. Like, they just have a fist fight. And, like, it goes on for a long time, including a body slam. Like, the guy body slams this woman into the bar. But the woman also seems to be a better fighter, maybe. It's kind of unclear.
Well, it's ambiguous because we later find out that this guy is, like, legitimately trying to lose this fight.
Yeah.
And it's also supposed to be the, like, proof that this woman is a bona fide action star or, you know, a badass beauty or whatever. And, I mean, she's holding her own, which is kind of impressive against a guy with a biker gang, in a biker gang. But it still seems like she should just be absolutely dominating this guy. And instead, it kind of goes on a little bit like a shitty version of that fight from the Raid Redemption where you're not really sure who has the upper hand.
Yeah, but the Raid Redemption is like, you know, amazing fight choreography. This just looks bad. And it's not just that the actors don't know what they're doing. In fact, I think they probably do. There were some stuff where I was like, okay, they know a little bit here, but like they're probably given horrible direction. The camera angles are insane. I mean, there's one part where like it's like the middle of the fight and then it does a close up of the woman's face and she just looks like bewildered. And it's like, what the hell was that shot? Like, what are you trying to tell me here? Is she good at fighting or is she not? You know, this is an action movie. Like, what I want to see, if we're going to see a close up of her face and she's like supposed to be a badass beauty or, you know, a fucking killer instinct, you know, she's like the best fighter in the town or whatever. Like, we should see some confidence in her face and her getting ready to kick some ass. Like, it looked like she didn't know why the camera was in her face. And yeah. I'm pretty convinced that's what happened. I don't think it was like a choice, you know?
Yeah. And the other thing is that in general, like the beauty of an action sequence for me, at least, is the way that like one move kind of flows into another and each character is kind of adapting to like the changing situation of the fight. Right.
Right.
Whereas in these fights, if they'll sometimes show you someone doing a move, but that move will always be followed up to an abrupt cut, which I think is actually introducing like slight continuity errors. I got kind of like this weird headachey feeling, but you never see like, okay, I slammed, you know, she slams a guy into a table. I forget which it is. And then suddenly, you know, that guy's on the ground. So he like picks up, you know, like a knife and comes at her, you know, something like that.
Right. Yeah. No, it's like, it like feels like they have like a thing and then, like, maybe one person gets knocked up and then the other one just, like, kind of stands there while he, like, gets back up. And then they just fight again. And it's like, what is happening? And even the body slam, which is, like, maybe the coolest thing that they did, it looked so much like they were both getting into position for him to get slammed. Rather than, like, you know, in the middle of a fight, he gets slammed. Like, it looked like it was choreographed that way. And it's just like, dude, this is so amateur. Which... okay, you know, it's a totally amateur, low-production movie, but you would think with an action movie, that's where your money goes, you know?
Yeah. It looks like what they did, they paid Guy Pearce, and then they paid a pyro guy to blow up two cars, and that was about it.
Yeah,
and
like, yeah.
Yeah, like I said before, I get they might have had trouble getting financing or getting the film released, but if you wanted to make a good movie, the move would be, don't get Guy Pearce and take all that money put all that money in choreography, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, instead of, like, gunfights, do a bunch of fistfights, which are, I don't know if they're actually cheaper. They at least require, like, less, you know, props and such.
They
like,
look cooler and they're more memorable to me.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's less dangerous, probably.
Yeah.
Than having guns on set.
I don't know. Anyways.
So, okay, last high point. Let's just call this out. Guy Pearce elevates his scenes. The acting in this movie is so bad. It's like really interesting to see Guy Pearce in a scene because you're like, wow, it's like really, really refreshing to see an actual actor in this movie. I will say there's a lot in this movie where maybe he's phoning it in. But to be fair to him, there's like nothing in the scene. So it's like kind of hard to say. Maybe he's just doing his best and like that's just the way the movie was for whatever reason. But like in the scenes where he has to like put up some emotion, he throws it down.
Yeah. And the other thing is most of the things that he's called upon to do are to kind of like skulk around and look concerned. And Guy Pearce has kind of resting concern face anyways. So,
yeah, it works.
Yeah.
But it's also a total waste of how much they spent on him because it's like, okay, fine. He's just wandering around looking confused. Like basically anyone could do that. Like even the assistant who's the deputy who's a terrible actor does fine when he's just walking around alone. Like, that's fine. there's not really much acting involved.
I'm clicking around a little bit, and let me read you some credits from Michael Ciro, who is the guy who played the deputy.
Okay.
Okay, first off, we've got, and then I'm going to have a question for you. So we've got Wrong Place, Fortress, Sniper's Eye, Fortress, Survive the Gang, and Out of Death. Those are the five top on his Wikipedia or his IMDb. He's also in something called Paw Paparazzi, which is apparently about people trying to take pictures of a dog. But anyways, out of the five movies I just named, not counting Paw Paparazzi, how many of them do you think starred Bruce Willis?
At least two.
Five.
Five out of five?
Yeah.
So he must have known him.
I know this is in that period where Bruce Willis, they knew he was declining, but they were trying to get as much money for him before he had to stop acting. So he was just like essentially showing up to shoot for a day in a lot of low budget action movies so that he could build up a nest egg for his family. You know, and they'd like do a pretty easy shoot for him and it would be fine. I have assuming that his managers were treating him respectfully and not like stealing his money. I have absolutely no problem with him doing that, but it is still pretty. This guy is just. He's starring in five shitty movies where they're like, okay, let's go get, you know, Bruce Willis and, you know, he can shoot for a day and then we put him on the poster.
Yeah, I know he was in The Fortress. I haven't seen those movies, but I know he was in
I like early period Bruce Willis and again, no shine on him for trying to get his back while, you know, he still could. But late period Bruce Willis is, now that I know what was really going on as opposed to him just being like, I like money. It's a little too sad to watch.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I saw him in
Death Wish.
Death Wish. And it was like, dude, he is. I mean, obviously, this was like the start of his decline because it was like, what, in 2017 or something?
Mm-hmm. I think that might be the only movie that Man Cow is in.
Huh.
Famous Chicago shock jock.
Oh, yeah.
And prolific liar. Bruce Willis still has... Michael Ciro has six upcoming movies this year, all in post-production.
Well, whatever. I mean, I'm sure... I feel like what he does is kind of like Hallmark stuff, where, like, they produce, you know, so many movies with the same actors in similar sets, like, all at once. I have to imagine that's what's going on with these action movies.
Yeah, I don't got, you know... Unless he has like absolutely risible personal politics or something, his existence doesn't offend me, and I got no problem with him trying to get that bag.
No, but absolutely not.
He's bad at this.
I don't have a problem with Hallmark movies either, but they're kind of terrible.
Wasn't this movie literally put out by Chicken Soup for the Soul?
I don't recall.
Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. I think that was He Never Died, which is the other movie I was trying to. Apparently, for some reason.
That one was good.
Yeah, I don't know. No, maybe it was this one. I don't know. I know that Chicken Soup for the Soul, for some reason, they transitioned from like books about like, you know, how life is basically okay to making kind of shitty to okay directed video action movies.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that. I love that pivot.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get more low points, I guess.
Low points. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll
into the low points.
Horrible, horrible stuff. So first of all, the bad guy, two of the bad guys in this, and also one of the good guys are like, you know, sort of busty blondes in like tank tops. And they're not terribly well differentiated to me, especially the two bad guy ones. So
forgot that there were two of them.
Yeah, it's very hard to remember. There's the one who somehow got a job at the bank to help them rob it in a way that does not seem to have mattered at all. And then there's the one who, you know, helps them like, kill that cop for some reason.
Oh yeah, I guess there's the one that's like, I guess dating Devon Sawa.
Yeah,
even though he clearly, I mean, it felt like at certain points in the movie where they wanted to make him into the preacher's daughter, but that like never comes to fruition. As does a lot of stuff does not come to fruition.
He's got an unspecified grudge against the town and the pastor, who was definitely the good blonde's father, and the good blonde might also be the current pastor. I was not sure.
It's unclear, but it doesn't matter because it's never elaborated on.
Yeah, unless perhaps her knowledge of the church helped her escape when they were planning on. No, it didn't. She just got into a cat fight and then they kind of left.
Yeah, it did not help. Yeah. I guess it was that she's like a good person because she's into God,
I guess. Another low point I have is that Guy Pearce, like when he first meets Devon Sawa, he vows to arrest him. And then at the end, when Devon Sawa is like being shot and is lying in front of a truck, Guy Pearce just shoots him.
He just executes him. And it's after, like, after Devin Sawa says, like, go ahead, shoot me. That's what good guys do, right? And it's clearly leading up to a point where, like, he's supposed to arrest him and be like, no, you know, I told you I was going to arrest you. And then he just executes him. And it's very unclear if that's supposed to be played for laughs or what was happening.
I mean, isn't the line literally like, does it feel good killing evil people? And then Guy Pearce goes, sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. It's like, what? Are you serious? What was that about? I don't know. Yeah. Like, they clearly did not understand. Okay, here's another thing, another low point related to that. Okay, the movie starts off with him shooting his partner. That's clearly the thing that has haunted him this whole time. Well, he hasn't picked up a gun. Mm-hmm. He's really fucked up about it.
He gets so drunk that the mayor tries to have him fired, even though he's off duty when he gets drunk.
Yeah. And, like, he has a new partner, an innocent guy. It's clearly leading to another second time in his life where he has to deal with a hostage situation, right?
Uh-huh.
Except that never happens. It just doesn't happen for no reason.
It should literally be the deputy gets taken hostage, but because he told him the code earlier, the deputy does the code, and then Guy Pearce pulls it off successfully. But
it
nope.
makes so much sense for that to be the final confrontation, and it just does not happen.
Yeah.
It's just like, did you guys start to write that and then you forgot about it? Or, like, did you not have the deputy guy for the last day of filming and you're like, screw it, let's just have him execute him off screen or something? I don't know.
Maybe it was like when the time came for the Devin Sawa showdown, they realized that they had used up all of the whatever smoke pellets they were using in the guns. So that's why that he also shoots Devin Sawa off screen.
Maybe that's it. I mean, honestly, it kind of makes the decision to have him kill his partner before the movie starts totally irrelevant to the plot of the movie.
I mean, yeah, because it's not like there is ever a point in the movie where the fact that he doesn't have easy access to a gun really seems to be motivating the plot particularly.
Not at all. Not at all. He gets captured immediately. I mean, whether or not he had a gun wouldn't have changed that. And then as soon as he kind of gets free, he blows some people up with no remorse, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's clearly not that he doesn't want to kill people. It's just that he doesn't want to shoot people. And then he very casually and slowly, with no urgency, which that's going to lead into my next low point, finally goes to get his gun and then starts executing them all.
Except, again, his gun does appear to be made out of plastic.
Right.
Also, I forgot a high point, which is that when he goes to get his gun, he's inside his house. He's put his gun in a display case along with his U.S. Marshals badge, which I really thought they would have like taken, or Texas Rangers badge, rather. He's a U.S. Marshal now, which this film joins Justified and a great many other movies and not understanding what the fuck the U.S. Marshal does. But anyways, so he's got them all in a glass box, and they for some reason the Rangers didn't take the badge back. And as he's doing this, in the background, there's just a painted picture of a cool kid in sunglasses leaning nonchalantly against a tree. And I want to know why he has that in his house. I like that artwork.
He doesn't have a family.
If he has a family, it is never mentioned.
I'm fairly convinced that almost all of the sets in this are just real people's houses. Because it's set in the city of Cave Horse, which I remember thinking, like, that's a strange name for a city, but okay. But then at the end, I for some reason watched the entire credits. There's a thanks to the citizens of Cave Horse. So it seems like why they filmed so many scenes of them walking around outside is because they had dominion to film inside the entire town, and so just did that.
Is it Cave Horse or Horse Cave?
Might be Horse Cave.
I think it's Horse Cave. And you know what? I've just done some Googling and I'm now very angry at this because if it is Horse Cave, one, it's not in Texas, it's in Kentucky. And two, the entire town appears to have been built over a large cave that you can go down into, which explains how at one point there's a sign saying no dumping. There's kids playing down below off the side of a bridge. Oh yeah, definitely this is where they shot. I can recognize one of the pictures. But that also means that there's a much cooler filming location literally right beneath their feet that they're just ignoring.
There's a cave. It's named after, the town is named after it, and they did not film there?
Yeah, insane. I'm gonna post a picture in the Discord of this. It actually like looks legit cool, and I might try to go here at some point.
Huh. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, the town looks nice, but very boring use of it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, especially just baffling that they didn't use the fucking cave.
Okay, so the next low point that I have People wander around in this movie with zero sense of urgency.
Yes.
To the point where at one point, Guy Pearce and the deputy are inside of a building. Devon Sawa is outside. He grabs a citizen and says, like, I'm going to shoot her. I'm going to start counting down and I'm going to shoot her when it gets to zero, unless you guys come out and surrender yourselves. They kind of just, he's futzing around with something, and then they slowly stroll out of the building, like out the back to go leave, without any acknowledgement that this is happening. And then the guy just executes the woman, and I don't see any sense of remorse or sadness from the two cops who were supposed to be protecting everyone. It's like they didn't even know what was happening, but it was right outside the window and he was yelling. Like, they clearly heard it and just chose not to acknowledge it. And not only did they not acknowledge it, they didn't speed up. They didn't try and like hurry their stuff up. They didn't make any attempt to help in any way. It's just like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
And this happened throughout the entire movie. Like, Guy Pearce is very slowly and casually strolling around the town while people are getting killed. And it does not seem like there's any reason why he's being slow and deliberate. It's not like he's sneaking around and, like, you know, really sweating it out. Like, oh, shit, I got to be really careful or else I'll get shot and then I can't hurt anyone and I can't help anyone. Like, it just seems like he doesn't care. And I know that Guy Pearce has, you know, he has scenes in this where it's like, OK, clearly he knows what he's doing. But, like, for whatever reason, they did not give him that direction.
Yeah.
And it's baffling.
I legit wonder how much of this is just Guy Pearce in costume. Like, they're like, hey, just wander around the town. We'll do B-roll and then we can use it to fill in scenes later. And then they're like, hey, you know, we got all this footage. Why don't we just use that instead of having proper, you know, action scenes?
It really feels like that. It just feels like filler. It's so boring. And so much of it is just Guy Pearce not walking around a town, looking around, not interacting with anyone. Very, very confusing.
Now, I've got another low point, which is the character of Jarhead. This is the Marine. He's a member of Devon Sawa's gang. There's no real reason why he should be a member of Devon Sawa's gang, because the only things we see him do are complain when members of the gang kill people, which they do with some frequency. Guy Pearce arrests him, and then in a baffling scene, there are two guys coming after Guy Pearce, and Guy Pearce is very good with a gun, and it kind of seems like he could just take out the two guys. But instead, he goes to Jarhead in the prison cell and is like, so are you a Marine? And it turns out they're both Marines, and they bond over the fact that they're both Marines. So then he lets Jarhead out and gives him a shotgun. And instead of shooting Guy Pearce and becoming the hero of the gang, Jarhead then attempts to fight the gang and is killed almost instantly.
And, like, there is very little bonding that happens here. He just basically asks him if he's a Marine, and then he's like, well, will you honor your vow to protect the country? And the guy's like, yes, sir, I will. And it's like, why did you rob a bank then? You're willing to honor the vow that you already made, why did you rob a bank where you knew you were bringing in guns and could easily kill someone and you're stealing people's livelihood? Like, I, you know, whatever, criminals do criminal stuff. Like, that's totally fine. But, like, you can't just convince me that he's a good guy because he was in the fucking military.
Yeah. And also at one point Jarhead is like, I didn't sign up to kill anyone. And then Devon Sawa was like, well, you were in Iraq. I bet you killed a lot of people there. And Jarhead goes, that was different. That was war. And Devon Sawa goes, this is war.
Yeah. And it's like, who are you at war against? The sheriff? And
the also, armored truck company.
And also, like, why does Devon Sawa get a riff off against the U.S. military invading Iraq?
Yeah.
Like, are we supposed to like him for that? I don't.
Are we supposed to understand that people who oppose the war are no good?
I don't know. I honestly don't know what that was about.
Yeah, just baffling. All around baffling.
Just, oh my God. Yeah.
Do you have any other? Oh, I have another low point, which is that there's a scene. Well, basically everything involving the two armored truck drivers is awful. It starts with a scene where one of the armored truck drivers is hassling, I think, a prostitute who works at the casino for a date, and she eventually gives it to him. And I legit thought that this was like a scene from a porno that had gotten spliced in. That's the level of it. And not like one of those pornos where they're actually trying to act. One of those pornos where they're like, we need a little dialogue before they get to fucking, you know?
Yeah. The acting in this is to the point where they barely, like, they memorize the lines and that's about it.
Yeah.
Everything is read in just like, as if you're reading it off a page with no emotion.
And then his partner notes that the man appears to be of Hispanic descent. And then his partner notes that they're bringing in $5 million and that would buy a lot of tacos. And his partner goes, you know, that's kind of racist, but I love tacos. So.
Okay. Did the partner die?
Yes.
Did I look away for a second and he died?
Yeah.
Because he was in the front and they blew up the back, but then you can clearly see into the inside of the van and it's not like the part that goes to where the driver is not damaged at all.
I thought his partner, like, they died when they, like, shot him in the van. I don't remember.
The driver of the van.
Oh, the driver of the van dies in some capacity or another.
Yeah, because he's in the front, and they're like, oh, we got the explosions ready. And then he's like, no. And then they blow it up. But then I think they just don't show him again.
I think the assumption is that he died in the explosion, but obviously they didn't have quite enough explosives.
Yeah, right.
Also, there's this whole long scene where Devon Sawa is monologuing, trying to get the van driver to open the door. And it's unclear why this would matter, because they just are going to, they have explosives. So it seems like him opening the door would save them like 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's very confusing. Yeah. It would have made more sense if there was like a tension scene where, like, you know, it takes them a long time. They had to blowtorch through it and it's taking him a long time. He's like, come on, just save us this and y'all save your life. Otherwise, you're going to die once we get in there. It was very pointless.
Yeah. Another point. So I believe it was about $5 million in the armored truck, right?
I don't remember.
Let's assume probably. That.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a daily haul from a casino. It's not nothing.
Yeah.
I'm counting Devon Sawa's gang at about 11 people. You buy in that?
That sounds about right.
So even assuming equal shares, they're only clearing about $450,000, which is not nothing. But on the other hand, they are prepared to kill every single person in the town for that amount of money, which I don't know if there's a price.
You probably could even live the rest of your life off of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what the price is for me to kill everyone in a town. I don't think there is one, but it's definitely more than $1 million.
It's definitely higher than, like, you know, 9 years of pay at minimum wage or something.
It's maybe definitely more. Higher than the box office of Disturbing the Peace from 2022 or 2020.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was pretty baffling. No, I mean, like, they are pretty high. They're a pretty high budget operation for basically robbing one tiny small town's bank.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit better because, you know, they are getting the casino money, but even so, pretty bad.
Yeah. There's probably should have been like five people, but you know, they had to have some guys that got killed. Okay. Here's another low point. It's very stupid and I'm just going to get nitpicky here, but there's a part where everyone gets captured and you think basically they've lost. It's the very beginning. And then some guy, just some random citizen in the town, I don't even know if we've seen this guy up to this point, starts sniping he's hiding in the back of his truck and he's sniping the bad guys under a cover so they can't see him.
But he's a terrible shot.
He's a terrible shot. He hits maybe one guy and that's the first guy, and then he can never hit again. But also, it turns out that his wife is sitting in a car in plain view right in front of the criminals. Like, literally right in
front
of
them. Was that his wife?
Apparently it was, because he came out and he's like, that's my wife! Don't kill her!
Okay, yeah, he should have had her go inside or something before he...
Like, you knew what you were going to do! You didn't give her a warning? And she's sitting in the passenger seat, so I can only assume he was driving the car, got out, and went to go hide in the truck.
Or he was hiding in the back of that same truck. I don't know. That scene has very strange geography. I don't think they ever established where the dude is.
I mean, it makes zero sense that his wife is right there. But it's also, like, even if it, you know, whatever, buying into all these, like, crazy things that could happen to make his wife sitting in a car right in front of all the bad guys, he didn't give her a warning or anything. It's, like, the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
It's astonishing. Frankly.
Yeah, and that's the woman who they end up executing in front of the cops, and the cops do literally nothing and don't even say, like, oh shit, should we help her? Like, just beautiful. This movie was just beautiful.
I mean, that's one word for it. Yeah. I don't know if this is a high point or a low point, take it as you will, but this film did actually teach me something. which okay. is that for years I had been confusing Devon Sawa and Leigh Whannell. So I was watching this movie being like, I mean, Devon Sawa has Saw money. Why is he in this movie? And then I did a lot of Googling, and it turns out I just for years thought Devon Sawa and Leigh Whannell were the same person. And I legit wonder if it's just because Devon Sawa has Saw in his name. Anyways.
I think it's a very distinct possibility.
Yeah. I mean, they are both. No, they don't look alike. They're not from the same country. There's literally no reason I should have made that mistake. Devon Sawa does not write or direct films.
Yeah, I don't think he's really done much.
I mean, he's been in a lot of movies like this.
Yes, right. I don't think he's done much that like most people would recognize him from. So, anyways.
Anyways, some more entries from the Horse Cave, Kentucky Wikipedia page, which interests me. So around World War I, the only air-conditioned tennis courts in the world were located near the entrance of the cave.
Air-conditioned tennis courts?
Yep.
Very strange. I don't know that I've ever seen indoor tennis courts.
Yeah, and then a local theater known as the Horse Cave Theater and or the Kentucky Repertory Theater once operated in Horse Cave, but is no longer in business.
I guess that's something.
Yep. Anyways, okay, so...
Notables.
Yeah, just... I mean, the fact that that Wikipedia page legit more interesting to me than anything that happened in this movie. Really says something.
I mean, there's like a lot... I feel like there's a lot in this movie that happened in the middle that I just forgot.
Yeah.
And by a lot, I mean basically nothing. But like, there was like, you know, 45 minutes in the middle that it's like, I don't even remember really what happened. It was just people walking around saying stupid shit.
Yeah. Oh. So I remembered one last thing I want to say. Yeah. So for some reason that is never really explained, part of the bad guy's plan is that they need to have someone impersonate a state cop and tell the people driving the armored truck that there's a gas leak, but that it's fine and that they should keep going. So they go in and they find a state trooper. Jarhead does some super hacking to find the state trooper. And then they pull over, they speed in front of him. The lady does a little flirting and then a fat guy sneaks up behind him and shoot him. Now this cop appeared to be in like kind of normal American shape, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as far as you remember.
As far as I remember, yeah.
And the man who shoots him is like probably obese, right?
Yeah.
But then the cop's clothes just fit the man, no problem.
Maybe he had a spare pair in the back. I don't know.
He's like, in case I gained like 50 pounds, I better have another uniform. I might want to enter a pie eating contest, and you know how those go.
It would have actually been funny if that had just played into the costuming. Like the guy was wearing a clearly ill-fitting cop uniform, and that would have made him slightly more suspicious to the armored truck drivers. But no, they didn't do that.
Yeah, the inseam split, so he literally can't stand up, or they'll see his, you know, comical heart-shaped boxers.
You know what? It wouldn't have fit with the vibe of the movie, but that's fine. This movie had no vibe.
Yeah. This movie's vibe was Guy Pearce stares concernedly at things. But Dutt takes further action.
Yeah. This is probably like a bottom five movie for me.
Yeah.
It's really, really bad. And the fact that I saw a movie that's like significantly worse than this movie this week is just, I don't know. It's kind of changing my perspective on movies in general.
Yeah. This is really sort of driven home to me, like I said before, the different strata of direct to streaming action movies. And, giving me a new appreciation for things like, Ninja 2, Shadow of a Tear, or Debt
Collectors. Or like Undisputed 2.
Yeah, or Debt Collectors, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, those aren't like, a lot of the movies we just named aren't great, although some of them are. But they're movies. They have like action scenes and like character arcs and shit.
Well, and they have stuff in it that they're doing well, you know? They're not doing everything well, you know? Like Undisputed 2 is kind of terrible. But, like, the fighting in it is cool.
Yeah,
like,
the fighting in it's incredible. They're just like, hey, Scott Adkins, jump around. Hey, Michael Jai White, you know, punch him.
Yeah, and, like, it's not a great movie, but, like, is it a great vessel for what they were doing? I think so. I think it's kind of incredible.
Yeah.
But even a movie like Never Back Down 2, for example, also Michael Jai White, but really bad, like, really kind of bad actors in it, kind of a stupid movie. The plot's not that good. But they have pretty good fighting in it. Like, the action choreography is pretty solid. So it's, like, clearly they had a vision for what the movie was going to be, and they had a thing that was important to them, and that shines through. This movie doesn't feel like there was anything important to the director. I don't know why they made the movie.
I think that the fact that Guy Pearce was in the movie was kind of important to them. This is, at the very, one thing that could have been worse in this movie is a lot of the times they will pay for like a big star, but that big star will only be in like two or three scenes so they can put their name on the poster. You know, this movie, Guy Pearce is on the poster. Most of the scenes have Guy Pearce in them. The camera is probably on him like 80% of the movie, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, he's a good actor, but it's like, you got to give him something to work with.
He's a good actor, but he's not like Scott Adkins or Michael Jai White, where they can make action scenes kind of just, I mean, I'm sure there's stunt choreographers and stuff happening as well, but I believe that the Black Dynamite, Michael Jai White kind of just worked out his own stunts with the stunt.
I'm sure. I think Scott Adkins and Michael Jai White kind of do their own, like they can figure out the choreography.
Yeah.
They've been in so much.
Guy Pearce is not in that league. You know, he'll show up, he'll say his lines. He's good at pulling faces. He's good at acting, but he's not like,
he's not a stunt coordinator and he's not a stunt man really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways, this movie desperately needed that. I think
they needed something. Yeah. 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 If this had Scott Adkins in it, I feel instead of Guy Pearce, I think it would have been a lot better.
And if they'd cast like stuntmen instead of random character actors,
I legit think
they might not have had the money for like to cast stuntmen as like the main guys. Cause I imagine like a stuntman doing performing probably costs more than the community school or community theater guys they were getting for this, you know?
Oh, absolutely. But if you took out Guy Pearce, I mean, there's a lot of budget there.
Yeah, I assume he got probably like 4/5 of the budget on this movie.
Yeah, he had to have because the budget was so bad.
Yeah.
So low.
Oh, well. Anyways, don't watch this movie. I mean, I don't think that this isn't like we spent a lot of time talking about how funny things are. We were mostly just mad at it. So I don't think you would listen to this and think you should watch this movie, but don't.
It's not even fun bad.
It's just bad. I'd honestly say, like, you're not going to have a good time, but if you're going to watch one of the worst movies we've done, it really should be Night Creature, because that has a certain seeing is believing quality that this movie just doesn't, you know?
You know, I'm going to be honest. I think Night Creature is maybe a worse movie. It's more boring.
Yeah.
I think Night Creature was made with more love than this movie was.
Night Creature, at the very least, they're like, we're going to go to Thailand and we're going to at some point have someone interact with a leopard.
Yeah. Right. And like, they at least had some idea, like, this is the stuff that we want to have happen in the movie. It kind of ends up looking horrible and not really effective, but I think that they had some ideas of what they wanted in that movie. And in this, I don't know what the hell they were thinking. I don't know what they wanted. Nothing ended up happening.
Okay, now here's a puzzler for you, though. Which would you rather rewatch? I mean, in like a month or something when this is less fresh? This or Iron Mask?
How long is Iron Mask again?
It's like 2+ hours. That's one thing I got to say for this. It's like...
It feels a tight 90.
I mean, not tight, but it is 90.
Well, it's a tight 90 in that it's like exactly 90. It's not like 100.
Yeah, they're literally like, what's the shortest we're allowed to make a movie? Yeah. Okay, that's how long we are.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I would probably... Honestly, I think I would rather watch Iron Mask. Iron Mask has so much happening in it. I feel like a rewatch of it, I could like pick out weird shit. This just doesn't have anything. It's so boring. I mean, I could put it on the background. It wouldn't bother me.
Yeah. I guess if I was going to dig around on my phone, this is a fine thing to have on, although there's better.
There's much, much better.
Yeah. I think if I had to actually watch it, I'd probably go Iron Mask. I don't know if I would watch Night Creature over this. Just
cause no, at least, I don't think I would either.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyways.
I think at least, like, you know, there's Donald Pleasance in Night Creature, but I think Guy Pearce gives a better performance here. And there's, like, some action. I don't know.
There are. My memory is that Night Creature had a couple of very funny Donald Pleasance monologues, though.
Yeah. Those were pretty good. And honestly, the acting in Night Creature isn't horrible.
Everyone in Night Creature, as far as I know, like, starred in other actual movies, you know? Yeah, the main guy ended up starring in a bunch of DTV schlock called, like, Sex Roulette and shit, as we discussed, but...
Yeah. But, honestly, he still wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Like, some of the acting in Disturbing the Peace was, like you said, porn level or worse.
Yeah. There were some lines where I'm like, I'm not even sure that person had it memorized. It sounded like they were reading it off.
Well, I can't wait for you to watch 2025.
Oh, well, that's going to be in a couple of weeks. Anyways, I have nothing else to say to you.
No.
Yeah.
Let's play a game.
Yeah.
All right. Since it's a couple of us nerds this week, no Rahul, we're going to play a game called, and we're going to piss off other nerds. We're going to play a game called Universe Fight.
Okay.
And it's essentially just, you know, big universes from either fantasy or sci-fi. And I'm going to roll up a couple, and they're going to fight. And you're going to both determine who would win between the universes and who would win between the most famous characters of those universes.
Okay, this is going to be great because I have very weird ideas about who's the most famous people in a lot of universes.
I'm fine with that. All right, you ready? Well, no, I have the most famous, but you can do yourself inserts if you want.
Nah, hit me.
Okay,
yeah.
You ready?
The most famous one is always Lawrence. He's a super space marine and also a Jedi.
All right, first off, you get the Jurassic Park universe.
Okay.
And the most famous character from that, of course, is the T-Rex. versus the Nintendo universe, and the most famous character from that, of course, is Mario.
Now,
Go ahead.
Does Samus from Metroid count as part of the Nintendo universe?
You know, I'm going to let you, the player, decide on that one.
That's sort of important to me because Samus is, as far as I know, the only Nintendo character who has a gun and will kill things. Which I think is going to be quite necessary if they're going to fight a bunch of dinosaurs.
I don't know. Is Samus part of the... Is Metroid a Nintendo property? I feel like it is.
Okay, how's this? She's in Super Smash Brothers before they started branching out to non-Nintendo stuff.
She's probably Nintendo property.
But on the other hand, I mean, there's just so goddamn many dinosaurs, especially as you keep going on and they keep like weaponizing them for some reason over and over and over.
Some of them have human intelligence.
Definitely everyone but Samus and maybe Bowser is going to die in the first minute or two. maybe Link could survive because he's pretty good with a bow.
Yeah, it feels like some of the guys fight dinosaurs in their games.
Yeah.
Like Mario, you know what? Right? Aren't there dinosaurs?
This is weird. Star Fox actually went to a whole planet of dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah. And Star Fox Adventures.
Yeah, that was not a good game.
No. No. But he did go to a planet full of dinosaurs.
And hit them all with a stick.
Yeah.
Fuck. You know, I think I'm going to have to give it to the Nintendo guys because the four people who are going to be left of Star Fox, Samus, Bowser, and Link are all capable of rational thought. And I don't believe that the dinosaurs are. So I think eventually they will prevail unless it's like in the Jurassic World Dominion or whatever.
I think it's the entire universe.
Oh, shit. In that case, there's just so goddamn many dinosaurs.
And some of them seem to do have human intelligence, or at least near human.
Yeah. I guess you
Indominus. Wait, is Indominus the one from Jurassic World?
And then apparently the last one has something called an Atrociraptor.
Oh, yeah.
They taught a raptor to commit war crimes or something. Yeah, shit. I could see this going either way. You know what? I'm going to give it to the dinosaurs. I think that they've just got a numbers advantage, and most of the Nintendo universe is not really set up for combat.
You know, if they're like cartoon characters, they first sight of blood, they'd freak out.
Yeah. The Nintendo characters are going to lose because the Jurassic Park world has death in it and theirs doesn't.
Okay, how about Mario versus a T-Rex?
Okay, does Mario have the hat that lets him possess the T-Rex?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, player decides.
Fuck. Okay, I think that Mario is going to somehow befriend the T-Rex because one-on-one he can use his powers of friendship and jumping, but in a like combat situation where those aren't options, the T-Rex wins.
Fair enough. All right.
I think we have
some definitive answers there. All right, I'm going to go next. Okay, I got Arthur and the Round Table, that kind of universe, versus StarCraft universe. And the main characters, of course, are King Arthur and Kerrigan. Well, this doesn't seem like a very fair fight.
Those guys have swords. And the other guys have siege tanks and shit.
I mean, I feel like there would be a battle cruiser that would just bombard them from... I don't know that Merlin could do much, you know? He's magic, but... You could also argue that the Protoss are magic, and it seems like siege weaponry still works on them.
Yeah. I mean, Gandalf's eventually going to run out of Psy energy and not be able to cast anymore.
Yeah, so I don't think that Arthur and the Round Table can win this. Although, okay, I will say, the StarCraft universe would not necessarily unite against the Arthur, King Arthur.
Oh, so yeah, maybe, that's true. They're constantly getting into like weird, like slapping matches and failing to unify against things.
So maybe, you know, King Arthur is pretty smart. He's got Merlin as his advisor. Maybe he could kind of sow some seeds of distrust with each other and like team up with Arcturus Minsk or something like that.
Now, my counterpoint is that no matter what Arthur does, he doesn't have access to a spaceship, and everyone at StarCraft does. So even if he like somehow is doing really good, they can just leave.
Well, I think you're right that the Arthur universe can't win, but can they survive? Possibly.
It depends on who they run into. The Terrans, I don't think, would mess with them. The Protoss would probably be enthralled by their tales of magic. The Zerg would just eat us.
The Zerg would mercilessly destroy them. And I just don't see any way that King Arthur could beat Kerrigan in a fight. I mean, he's got a magic sword, so like maybe he could cut her, but I don't think that he would actually be able to win the fight. She's very, very strong.
Okay, now is it going to be... Here's one thing, though. Kerrigan kind of keeps flopping back between being good and evil over and over and over, right?
Right.
So would this be... I mean, if she's good, maybe she wouldn't have beef with King Arthur.
Well, that's true, but if they were to fight, I think that's true. Kerrigan wins.
She does have either weird tentacles or a sniper rifle, and either of those seems like they could take on Arthur pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think this was a pretty one-sided one.
Yeah.
All right, you do one more.
Fair enough.
All right, here we go. Okay, you got the Sesame Street universe.
Okay, great.
Versus Star Wars. And, of course, the most famous characters from that are Darth Vader and Big Bird.
Okay. Now... Again, this seems very one-sided because Star Wars literally has wars in the title, and yeah. Sesame Street is all about how fighting isn't necessary because deep down we're all the same.
Yeah, but they've got what's his name?
Snuffleupagus?
Super Grover.
Oh shit, you're right. You know what? Super Grover is just gonna fucking exterminatus everyone in Star Wars. That's it. That's my answer.
Yeah, is there anyone that can take out Super Grover? That's my question, all right?
And as for the Big Bird versus Darth Vader fight, I mean, I'm sorry, Big Bird, but your neck is just too long and force-chokeable. You don't have a prayer.
He is quite a large bird, but, it probably doesn't really matter in this kind of scenario.
Yeah, it's nothing before the power of the dark side.
Yeah. Well... Good try, Sesame Street universe.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You won the war, even if Big Bird died in the fighting. Although now Super Grover's going to have PTSD from all of the blood, and he's going to have to sort of deal with that, and you're going to have to deal with having a PTSD Super Grover walking around, being startled by loud noises, and not treating his wife as he should.
I think that Super Grover and Darth Vader might fight, you know, until the end of time.
Yeah.
It's just a stalemate forever. Or
it's going to turn out that Super Grover is somehow related to Darth Vader, so Darth Vader's going to throw himself down a hole.
Yeah, that, you know, who knows how it would play out. I think only the gods of Sesame Street and Star Wars know.
You know, George Lucas probably could have bought Sesame Street at some point if he'd wanted to and made this crossover happen.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Sesame Street thing, incidentally? I don't know.
Bert and Ernie, probably.
Yeah, I don't really remember it that well. I wasn't that big of a TV kid growing up, but I do remember there was a special my parents had taped where it was just like a glam or sort of like Cyndi Lauper thing called I've Got a New Way to Walk, but with Miss Piggy. And for some reason, that's always struck with me as very charming. I don't know what the point of the song was, though.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. You really screwed up. You're going to get a lot of hate mail because that's the Muppets.
Oh, wait, nope. I'm looking at it. I've seen the video right now, and it looks like Destiny's Child might have sung it at one point.
Miss Piggy is the Muppets, not Sesame Street.
Oh, sorry. I think this might be about traffic safety.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're both essentially Muppets. I don't know how's the Sesame Street and the Muppets universe related?
Unclear, but
also, who would win in a fight?
I mean, obviously, the Muppets, because
Well, at least one of them, Miss Piggy, knows Kung Fu.
That's true. Yeah. Miss Piggy is pretty pretty intimidating.
Yeah. So from the Muppet Wiki, which it's wonderful that exists, A New Way to Walk is a Sesame Street song performed about celebrating the joys of pedestrianism and the individual, as performed by the Oinker sisters, with Ivy Austin singing lead vocal. So cool.
So anyways, it is in the Sesame Street universe, but I thought you said it was Miss Piggy.
I think the fact that they were three female pigs singing it threw me off. Got it. Also that I saw it when I was very young.
Got it. Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe there's crossovers too.
Yeah. And Destiny's Child did sing it. Anyways, I guess let's go to some recommendations and cautions.
All right.
You go first.
Okay. Recommendations and cautions. I got one recommendation, one caution this week. Okay, recommend. This is a light recommend. I don't know exactly how I totally feel about it, but I think I enjoyed it on the whole. I enjoyed it enough to finish it. It's a show called Tulsa King, starring Sly Stallone.
Hell yeah.
From 2022. Okay, the premise of this show is Sylvester Stallone gets out of jail after 25 years, and he was in the mafia, but he never snitched. He comes out, and his boss tells him, you don't have a place here anymore because you were in the jail and you were in jail for 25 years. You need to go to Tulsa and set up a shop there. We think that there's a lot of potential in this, you know, town in Oklahoma, which basically, you know, is essentially banishment for him. But he actually does it. And that's the premise of the show, is him setting up shop as a mobster in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's a really fun premise in a show that doesn't necessarily execute it as fun as you might like. It kind of gets pretty serious, which wasn't my favorite part about the show. I kind of wanted just like Sly Stallone kicking ass and romping in Tulsa and setting up a big empire, but not really like trying to do Breaking Bad.
Yeah, it really seemed like it should have been a comedy, and it kind of wasn't.
Yeah, or at least part comedy, and it really wasn't. But I still enjoyed it enough to finish the first season. If there's another season, maybe I'll watch it. I'm not sure. Yeah, so that's my recommendation, TV show called Tulsa King. My caution, a movie from 1992 called Doc Hollywood. It's starring Michael J. Fox. And this is a movie that the director clearly really loved Frank Capra, who directed It's a Wonderful Life. It's about a doctor who is like a really good surgeon, and he basically leaves his big city New York job, and he's going to LA to to interview for a plastic surgery position, high paying, you know, glamorous job. But he gets stuck in some town. I think it's in Mississippi. I don't know, some in the South somewhere. And he gets stuck there for a week while his car's getting repaired, and basically starts to fall in love with the town and someone in it. Anyways, you've seen it before. It doesn't try to hide what it is, but I just didn't think it was that good. It's basically kind of like Cars, but Cars does it better. which, like, you know, not the best Pixar. I actually really like Cars, but not the best Pixar movie, and it does it much better than this movie does. Michael J. Fox gives a pretty good performance. I do think he's very charming, but I just don't think that this movie is really worth your time. It feels like almost self-indulgent, and like America, it's like trying to get into like this nostalgia of Americana in the 90s, which, like, I guess that's still nostalgic now, but it just feels like a fantasy. It feels like bullshit to me. So anyways, I didn't really enjoy it. Maybe you would enjoy it more, but I would caution against it. And that's it for me in words.
Yeah. Okay. So, I went pretty stupid this week, I'm not going to lie. I made you watch this, which was dumb, and now I've got a few other things. So first of all, I'm going to recommend a movie called Plane, starring Gerard Butler, that came out this year, 2023. Plane? Plane.
And it came out this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Gerard Butler. They actually let Gerard Butler do his own accent, which is a good call. And he plays an airline pilot who's like on this sort of like shitty little airline. And he's being assigned to fly like somewhere in the Asia, and there's a prisoner transport happening on his plane called played by Mike Coulter, who you may remember as Luke Cage from the film Luke Cage. And anyways, his plane gets struck by lightning. There's a very good sequence of him trying to land it. They end up going down on an island that's in the Philippines, I believe, and that is like completely outside of the control of the Philippine government. And it's full of like criminals and stuff. And it's up to, you know, Gerard Butler and Mike Coulter to form an uneasy alliance and get everyone off the island safely. Everything in it, the weird thing is that the action scenes aren't that good, but the plane stuff is incredible, which is weird.
I wish we'd watched that movie instead of this.
Yeah, maybe we should have. But anyways, you know, it's not going to like set your brain on fire, but it is kind of the thing you're sort of hoping for when you sit it down to a direct-to-video. Well, no, actually not quite, because it doesn't have really intricate fight choreography, but it's just, you know, a competently made like little like B-movie time waster. If you have something that lets you see movies like cheaply or for free in theaters, it's worth seeing on a big screen. But if not, if you're like in an airplane or hungover, just have a Saturday afternoon to kill, this is the kind of movie you want, and I would really check it out. And I also enjoyed that Gerard Butler in this, he plays like a decent dude. Like, he's got a good relationship with his daughter. He's a very studious captain. It's not like one of those movies where he's like a drunken fuck up. He's just like a good dude trying to make the best of a bad situation, which appealed to me. And for my caution, for God knows what reasons, I watched two Disney movies last week. I watched Strange World, which also wasn't very good, but it had Dennis Quaid like wandering around burning things alive with a flamethrower. So I'm not cautioning against that. But I also watched Raya and the Last Dragon. It's a Disney movie about like a like badass girl trying and an annoying dragon trying to like bring peace to their sort of kind of generically defined middle, or why do I keep wanting to say Middle East, like Asian kingdom. Benedict Wong is in it and he's pretty fun, although he's not in it enough. The main problem is that very early in the movie she gets reunited with the Last Dragon, who is voiced by Awkwafina, trying to do like a Robin Williams bit essentially, except one, it's computer animated, not regular animated. So, you know, all the stuff where Genie was going off on these incredible like flights of fancy and they were animating them all, you can't really do shit like that in CGI anywhere near as much. And two, Awkwafina is not Robin Williams, and I find her intensely irritating. So I just had a bad time with it, and I kind of wondered why I kept watching. Although, if you can get past Awkwafina, which I couldn't, there are some pretty clear and cool action scenes in it. Obviously, they're not like brutal or like drawing blood or anything. But, you know, the Incredibles had good action scenes. A lot of Disney animated movies now, they just, for some reason, they have pretty good action scenes, even if, I mean, they're kids' movies, so it's kind of weird that that's the thing they're stressing.
Yeah, I kind of liked Raya, actually.
Fair enough.
Because of the action stuff. But I totally get the, you know, Awkwafina is not Robin Williams for sure.
I don't know. I guess the more direct comparison is Mushu in Mulan, who was voiced by Eddie Murphy. What's?
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy, yeah. Who, you know, not Robin Williams either, but, you know. My memory is that he's better in that. Although on the other hand, I saw that movie when I was like 10.
Which, no, I think he holds up.
Yeah. And also that movie had much better songs. This one doesn't have any songs, let alone something as good as Dark Side of the Moon.
I wish. Yeah. I like musicals, man. I like music. I like songs in animated movies.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's good that maybe the Disney's trying to like do more diverse shit, even though I think they're doing it for absolutely cynical reasons. Like movie, I'm almost positive the reason they made it with such an Asian influence and with all like an all Asian cast was because they just wanted to do better in China. But, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess maybe at least they're like trying to actually explore different markets rather than just white kids in the United States.
How's this one? It's still probably pandering to the Chinese market some, but it is at least a very like well thought out and full pander, as opposed to the things where they'll just throw in a Chinese character in like Iron Man 3 and hope that that happened in Iron Man 2 and hope that the Chinese eat it up. Cause they're like, see, this person is from your country. Don't you love that?
Yep.
Anyways. Cool. And for a plug, Rahul, for some reason, sent us a video of a car exploding. And
yeah, but he also said, what did he say? It's like the shredder?
Yeah, which I'm clear what that
I
has
didn't know
to
if that was related.
Yeah, he said, let me get this up. Man, our group chat is out of control. A lot of stuff about trying to make me fuck an elephant.
Okay, he said, I'd like to plug poor Master Shredder who gave his life so we may live. And then, oh, okay, so apparently the truck was called Master Shredder. And it's just a truck revving up until the engine explodes.
Yeah, they like somehow removed all the safeties from this truck and just fucked up the gears and all this stuff so that they could rev it well past all the safety measures, and then it just exploded.
I don't know if it was supposed to explode or if it just they did that on accident. It's not really clear to me, but, you know, it was kind of cool video, I guess.
Yeah, it's ambiguous to me because it appears to be set up in such a way that people are a little shocked, but they're not as shocked as they should be from a car exploding.
But there's a guy on the inside and he has to jump out when it explodes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, this must be some kind of accident, although I don't know what the fuck they were trying to do when the accident happened.
Right, like it seems like they're just trying to make it explode, but it's like that is incredibly dangerous. Like, why not just put a stick on the gas or something?
Well, because he's got to manipulate the gears, I assume.
Maybe. I don't know.
You got to keep it in first.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyways, I mean, the thing on the Forable board was pretty good, but we got to get some more, like, quality shit in here, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck to us in a couple weeks when we do 2025.
I think we might make Rahul make you pick something and, like, you just go for a big, like, cheesy 90s movie or something. I can't.
Yeah. Well, we'll do 2025 first because I don't want to forget it.
Okay.
Because I'm not rewatching it and I'm making Rahul watch it.
Okay. Great. Good. You and your weird vendetta with Rahul. Fair enough.
He made me watch this crappy movie. He is not getting away with not watching it.
Okay.
It is the worst movie I've ever seen.
You know, you've seen the Red Light movie, dude.
It is worse than the Red Light movie. I am not exaggerating.
I can't believe that. That has to be recency bias.
Maybe. I don't really remember the Red Light movie as that well, but you will not believe how terrible this movie is until you watch it, which is like why I also need you guys to see it, because misery loves company.
Okay. Well, in 2 weeks, I guess we'll do that then. Anyways, bye, everybody.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather it.